You're listening to the Good Food for Glasgow podcast, but for this episode, we were actually at Nourish Scotland's Veg Summit, which happened in Edinburgh at the end of October. For this episode, we'll hear from a range of people who spoke at the summit or were exhibiting their work to get a good array of views on the question of how we get people in Scotland eating more veg. And first of all, we'll hear from Nourish's Good Food Nation Support Officer, Abigail McCall, for an introduction to the topic. Abigail, what are you hoping that people will get out of today and learn about getting more veg onto people's plates in Scotland?
I think the summit is good for bringing together a lot of different perspectives together in the one space. So if there's something to take away, I hope it's that sort of cross dialogue, just to have a general conversation about what the current barriers are to veg eating, because those barriers are very different for different people, for different groups, and just to get an understanding of what would make it easier for people to access veg and to eat veg in their daily lives, and hopefully take something back to their workplace or to their home life that is going to make it easier to eat veg.
As you're saying, there's lots of different barriers that are different in different parts of Scotland and for different groups, but what do you think some of those main barriers are at the moment for people to be eating the right amount of fruit and veg?
I think we've come out of quite a challenging period of time, both with COVID and other weather-related events, that has really shown the importance of the supply chain. I think that we need to be able to have a supply chain that we can rely on, that's resilient first and foremost, but also in terms of focusing on this veg eating question, it's a question of affordability, it's a question of whether we have diverse enough vegetables that are going to suit different cultures, different preferences. So it's also developing what vegetables look like and mean to different people. And I think it's also a question of the general sentiment around vegetables. So where they are in menus, where they are in packaging, what the advertising around vegetables is, because I think probably too often we're used to sort of hiding vegetables in meals rather than just emboldening them and putting them in the centre of the plate. So I think it's the broad section of things, but we do need to have those resilient supply chains, affordable veg, and I also think, yeah, culturally appropriate and dietary appropriate veg that is being grown here in Scotland.
And I think being here today, you can't help but be struck by that amazing range of fruit and vegetables. There's lots of veg stalls and you've got a competition of veg growers across Scotland. So it's easy when you're here to really believe that message that veg should be taking more of a central role and is something that we should be proud of. When you're here and you're maybe part of one of these industries, either you're a veg grower, you're working in food policy, or you know, you're part of the sector somehow, it's easy to appreciate. Do you think that kind of messaging can break out of the perception that maybe different fancier fruit and vegetables are only for a certain sort of person, or maybe it's only if you're really passionate about this kind of thing? Do you think there's a way that this celebration of veg can break into the mainstream?
It is notoriously difficult to have a conversation about veg with someone that's not already interested in veg, and that's probably another barrier in itself. Hosting a summit like this, even, you know, we want to be able to attract people to not only make veg exciting but have that conversation where veg is important and there are specific policy questions related to veg that everybody should care about. But it is easier said than done, because I think that traditionally vegetables are quite unexciting, especially in our memories, in our advertising. It doesn't have the most grasp, but I think that there is already movement to use vegetables to talk about health, to talk about what's going wrong, because they do show up so many blind spots in the national diet, so many blind spots in our policy and how veg is getting to our plate, that we can look through vegetables to see what's wrong and use vegetables to create solutions as well. And I think that if there is enough events like this and enough people coming that maybe wouldn't have spoken or thought about vegetables in that way before, that it's going to have that sort of domino effect.
What I'm hearing from you is taking a read of the food system through the lens of vegetables, taking vegetables as our starting point and thinking, okay, what does this show up about our food system? What do you think it does show us about our food system? If we look at the amount of vegetables that we're eating, if we look at the vegetables that we do eat and where they come from, it kind of illustrates all of these problems.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful to look through vegetables, because I think they show up the issues with our food environment, the limitations that exist and that push people to move away rather than come toward. And there's a lot of reasons for that in the food environment, but it is powerful to look through veg, how much we're producing, what we're producing, why isn't that getting onto plates, and to look at the food environment through vegetables can be a powerful activity, I think, and an important one, because it does show up that we don't have as much choice as we think when it comes to vegetable eating, and we need to make sure that we broaden that choice space for vegetables, especially because of what they can do not only for us but for broader policy and society.
My final question is around how this mission to get us thinking more about the veg we eat and appreciating our Scottish veg, how does that relate to your wider work at Nourish? How does this conversation fit into the wider Scottish policy context around food?
Well, I think it's really important. We are setting ourselves up for a lot of different conversations in a lot of different parts of the food system, especially in veg, and having these kind of conversations at this particular time is really important for us in anticipation of the national food plan, and then following that the local food plans. So we really value this kind of informal consultation with the community, so that we have an idea of what are the current barriers that people are facing and what do we need to think about, because the scope can be so broad. We don't want to miss anything in terms of coverage. And basically, I think that one of the main purposes of this event, tying into Nourish's work, is to ensure that we cast a big net over what the issues are, what the barriers are, so that we have that when we see the national food plan and when we come to making those local food plans, that we have that scope, because that's really important, and we have those voices there already. So a lot of it is anticipating being able to have that good solid feedback loop with whatever the plan is and whatever the community is saying. So this is one of many steps and one of many forums, I think, where we can get that kind of coverage and that feedback.
The Veg Summit was structured around provocations from a range of people who all brought a different perspective and consideration to the question of how we get people eating more vegetables. So to further the discussion, first we'll hear what Gillian from Food Standards Scotland had to say, and then from Nikki Phillips from Kettle Produce.
In Scotland, we're unique. We've got a set of Scottish dietary goals. They're actually Scottish Government goals, but at Food Standards Scotland, we have a role to monitor those goals. The goals indicate the dietary change that we need to achieve to reduce diet-related diseases, and the sectorial representation of those goals is the Eat Well Guide, which I'm sure you'll be familiar with. We've been monitoring a long time, almost 20 years now. Our diet is too high in fat, sugar and salt, too low in the good stuff like vegetables, fibre and oily fish. So we've not seen a lot of improvement, and this is creating a lot of problems for our health service. We've got a lot of chronic conditions, overweight, obesity, but heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, many types of cancer are all impacted by our diet. So this gives us an opportunity. We know our monitoring shows that we average about 3.4 portions of fruit and veg a day. So there's a lot of scope to increase vegetables particularly. And our data shows that what's promoted in the retail and out of home are things that are less healthy for us. So, you know, chocolate, sweets, confectionery, they're the most promoted types of things. So we really need to improve this food environment to support access to affordable, healthy foods. Vegetables are really vital for our health. They provide us with a range of nutrients, vitamins, minerals and fibre that can help reduce our risk of heart disease and many cancers. So it's not going to be easy. We know that a listing change around diet takes a lot of time, and it requires upstream actions like at the policy level, but also downstream activities too. There's no single thing that will do this, so today let's concentrate about those networks and the multiple things that we can do. Now, Good Food Nation Act, this is a unique opportunity for us to look across the whole food system, try and make some joins that haven't been there before, and look at these local plans and national plans, see how they link together. The Scottish Government will set up a food commission to look at those national plans, but what I'm interested in is how we can link up with the local plans and the monitoring role that we have. To make the greatest impact, we really need to focus away from those individual behaviour changes and address our food environment and those systems changes. We need to really rebalance it. At the moment, we're driven towards HFSS, mentioned earlier, and away from the vegetables, but how can we turn that round? How can we put vegetables and fruit and healthier things, make them the easy choice for everyone, make them affordable as well?
So I'm Nikki Phillips, I'm Head of Technical at Kettle Produce. We grow, harvest, prepare and pack a range of crops, both homegrown and procured. Although growing in value, the market is pretty static in volume at 6 million tonnes. But you can't help but see that as a nation, 13 million of us are obese. And with only 1 in 10 children and a third of adults eating the recommended 5 portions of fruit and veg a day, we are a long way from being a healthy society. Add to this the cost of living crisis and the availability of cheap processed food makes decisions for consumers difficult. When I think about the challenges facing our sector, I can't help feel that we are starting at an unfair disadvantage. As we supply own label to retailers, we work on low margins and as such don't have the resources and funding like the big branded food manufacturers in the UK. So when a family can buy a packet of biscuits for the same price as a bag of carrots, who can blame them for thinking those are an easy way to keep hunger at bay for their kids? And yes, there is education and policies in place, but HFSS blatantly ignored by most retailers. How can we ever compete against the big boys of the food industry? Until radical action is taken to reduce our nation's reliance on processed food high in fat, sugar and salt, then nothing will change. I recently read an article in The Grocer that the UK currently domestically produces 35% of its total supply of fruit and veg requirements, with net imports making up the other 65%. But this figure was before food waste was taken into account, with an estimated 23% of UK-grown fruit and veg wasted after leaving the farm. Our dependence on imports puts our food security at risk by exposing us to cost and supply fluctuation, while domestic producers like us are suffering increased costs, threatening the viability of business. I would urge the National Food Plan to focus on six key areas. Help us as an industry to get a fair deal from retailers so they buy what they agreed to, pay what they agreed to pay, and pay on time, especially with smaller producers. There's a disconnect between what retailers want to sell and the product grown. The public face is very much about less waste and working with producers, but retailers still want perfect shaped produce with no defects to make their shelves look like perfect pictures. Support low-income consumers by expanding schemes such as free school meals and Healthy Start, and by ensuring veg is always available for all, wherever they shop. Support the drive for fruit and veg consumption through initiatives and advertising, alongside making better use of government to ensure all taxpayer-funded meals in schools, hospitals, prisons and government offices include three portions of fruit and veg. Boost domestic vegetable supply to ensure Scotland and the UK is not reliant on other nations. Finally, and most importantly, tax and police the food that is making our nation sick. Make fruit and vegetable the go-to food source for basic nutrition.
The next person I spoke to was the programme manager at Sustainable Food Places, Leon Ballin.
I'm Leon. I work nationally, but I'm based in Sheffield, so it's great to be in Edinburgh.
It's great to have you up in Scotland. So today's Veg Summit is all about getting more veg onto people's plate. What do you think is the key area that would push that mission forward? What do you think we can do to get more veg on people's plates?
I think there's loads of things, but the one that stands out for me particularly is public sector procurement. Public sector procurement, I think, could be a complete game changer if the big institutions, hospitals, schools, prisons, and the universities I count in there as well, if they could buy more veg, serve it in the right way, so it increased consumption. And if it was local UK veg as well, it'd be great for the economy, so it could be a win-win situation. But what it requires is changes to procurement practices and better contracts, but I think that could be the real game changer.
And why do you think with that win-win it's something that we're not already seeing? What do you think those barriers are to get those changes in place?
I think there's a few things. I think one is we are stuck in our ways. We've got institutional sclerosis, as they call it. The old practices are still there, but it can change. It has been changing in some places, and forward-thinking hospitals and NHS trusts and so on are doing it. I think also we've maybe not got the supply chains ready to do that. A lot of the UK grown veg might go straight into the supermarkets or go abroad, whereas we might be buying stuff in from abroad, so it doesn't make sense. So I just think it needs some big structural changes and some better infrastructure. The government could lead the way in Scotland and in Wales and in Parliament in Westminster as well. So just some forward thinking from politicians, procurement managers and senior managers in those institutions.
So I'm here with Tara from the Land Workers Alliance, and I see that something that you're campaigning for is better public procurement in terms of more locally grown food being bought by those institutions that are serving food like schools and hospitals. How would that help farmers, as well as meaning that more of the veg that we're eating is grown locally?
Well, public procurement provides a really stable local market for farmers. Loads of our members are really, really keen to feeding into public institutions as well, especially things like local schools and hospitals. Our members tend to feel really passionately about getting good, organic, healthy local food into communities. And a challenge in terms of how much it costs to produce it, sometimes the prices that the food is then sold for are quite high and not accessible to everybody, whereas if they're bought by local authorities and fed to everyone in the community through public procurement policies, through school meals, for example, then the high quality local food becomes accessible to everyone in a way that it isn't necessarily through the kind of more direct sales approach. So loads of our members are really, really keen to be selling more to local authorities.
That's really interesting that those growing the food maybe want that food to be more accessible and, like you're saying, your members, but it's just not something that the current market allows. To say a little bit more about that, are there other ways that farmers can maybe have more direct, are farmers markets good, veg boxes, those kinds of things? Are there other ways that you think farmers in the UK can get their veg onto more people's plates?
So I think, yeah, veg boxes and farmers markets, and we're starting to see some solidarity veg box schemes where some people pay a little bit more and some people pay a little bit less. There are various ways that farmers can direct sell into the community. But I think the real issue we're seeing here is where the farm subsidies are going. There's a huge amount of government subsidy for farming, but that's mostly going to large scale arable and livestock farming. So for example, the grain that we used to make alcohol is heavily subsidized by the government, but fruit and veg that goes into local communities receives no subsidy at all because it's grown on small scale farms. So if we just shifted that and had some of those subsidies going to local fruit and veg instead of subsidizing large scale industrial production, then the food would then be able to be sold at prices that were affordable to everybody in the community. So I think that that question of where these very large amounts of subsidy go really has a big impact on who can access good local food.
And the agriculture bill and that work around subsidies is something that, if I'm right, the Scottish government has quite recently reevaluated and consulted on. Of the new agriculture bill that's come out, what is the Land Workers Alliance view on that? I assume you've had a bit of a look at it. What's your take on how that has come out of it?
So the objectives that they've put and the purpose clause at the beginning of the bill all sound great. The vision for agriculture we're very on board with, but the actual proposals in the bill are going to bring about very little change as they currently stand. We're still looking at a subsidy system that's mainly based on area. So the more land you own, the more money you get, which is a really inefficient use of public money. It's really unfair. It's not going to support fruit and veg production. So one of the kind of main focuses for us is looking at having redistributive payments, which is where people would get more funding for the first few hectares of land that they farm, and then it would taper off above a certain size. It's actually mandatory across the EU now, so we think it's really important that we have that here so that the subsidy system is fairer, because as it stands, it's not going to bring about any of the kind of transformational change that we need to see.
Now to hear a further provocation from one of the presenters at the summit. This is Jane Jones from Argyll and Bute Council talking a bit more about public procurement.
Public food could, should, and in my view is at the heart of becoming a good food nation and supporting the transformation that we all want to see in our food systems. That is through a number of things, so through supporting community wealth building by purchasing more local, sustainable and ethical food, helping to address health inequalities, helping to improve attainment for our children and young people, and through our food procurement, helping to tackle climate change and biodiversity loss. And vegetables sits at the heart of a lot of that. So what can public caterers, and in particular school meals providers, do to promote and improve the uptake of veg? Well, we are the key to driving behavioural and systems change around this. So we're providing round about 500,000 school lunches every day. And we touch the lives of virtually everyone in society at some point. There are over 700,000 children in schools in Scotland. There are 43,000 weans in early year settings. 1 in 11 people were admitted to hospital in 2020. 1 in 8 of us visited outpatients. There are 13,000 hospital beds, 38,000 care home beds, 7,500 people in our prisons. We have 213,000 college students and 19 multi-site university campuses. That's a lot of people. In terms of school food, Scotland already leads the way in school food regulation. And across the school day, our young people already have access to between 5 and 6 portions of fruit and veg across that school day. And we saw during the pandemic that when our weans were at home, 55% of our children and young people ate no veg. So that access to food is really, really critical. We know that school meals is, for many, the only time those children and young people will have vegetables. And we have a unique moment in time here in Scotland to really transform the eating habits of our generation. We are now feeding eligible 2- and 3-year-olds in school who have 1140 hours of childcare. And we see with our own eyes how their eating habits are changing. So when they get to primary school, they're confident in using crockery and cutlery and are not intimidated by different foods before. They have a healthy snack, which includes fruit and veg every single day. We're on the journey to implementing universal free school meals, and we're normalising food as part of the school day as much as lessons in PE is, and that is an opportunity. We're seeing more veg and pulse-based dishes on school menus, and they help us to ensure inclusion for pupils with allergies, with special medical, cultural and lifestyle diets. But it's important for us to make sure that we are moving forward and changing the food culture that's happening in our schools today. And we're seeing more and more schools embedding food through the curriculum and using it in lessons, taking that pride and pleasure in food that we want to see. Veg is great for discussions about sound, texture, lessons about patience and having to wait. And we just love seeing Wayans getting excited, growing their own produce and then enjoying it. That for me is culture change happening on the ground. And public caterers, although we are far from perfect, my goodness, we are making a difference.
And now that we've heard a lot on public procurement, we'll go back to Leon Ballin from earlier.
You need positive encouragement for people to eat more vegetables. There's this belief that, oh, you know, children don't eat veg and so on, but they do. If you do growing at school and cooking at school, children will eat veg. There's this myth that veg are horrible and you have to force children to eat them. That's just not true. So I think a lot more positive advertising, I think, would really work. I think we're hardwired to eat really good food, and we just need some encouragement to move away from the processed stuff and encouragement to eat the good stuff. But also, we do live in an environment that is geared towards attracting us to the food that maybe we shouldn't eat, because that's where the profit is. So I think more controls on industry would help as well.
And I suppose it's quite a hot topic at the moment as well, about how do you get this when maybe that industry changes what we need in terms of not pushing the ultra-processed foods so much. Do you see ways that industry can be influenced, or do you think once again that's sort of got to come from governments in the UK?
Industry will change if they think it makes sense to their bottom line, which it might do sometimes. But in the end, they are in competition with each other. So the bottom line does matter. So very often it needs to change in policy and legislation. But if they see the opportunity to make more money by increasing the sales or the advertising of vegetables rather than ultra-processed food, they will do that. But they do very often have to be pushed into it. Like the advertising ban for junk food in London was an amazing thing. And it's worked. And there's been no loss in advertising for Transport for London through that. So that sort of thing could be rolled out. The expectation that the industry will fix these problems, I think, is misguided, because it is not in their interest to do so. So you have to make it in their interest to do so.
While we heard a full presentation from the team at Central West Integration Network in Glasgow about their work and about how we can make it easier for asylum seekers and refugees to eat more vegetables, I just wanted to include this quick note from them.
Our community members certainly don't need any education on vegetables. Most people we work with are amazing cooks. They don't need cookery classes. In fact, they could be running the cookery classes. Our conclusion is getting disadvantaged people to eat more veg is about raising the standards of living and trust that people will make the right choices once they're in a better place.
The Healthy Living Programme is designed to try and encourage convenience retailers to have a wide range of healthier products in store. So concentrate predominantly on fruit and veg and then other healthy options on top of that. So our main goal is to make sure that the availability is in store for consumers when they go in to make that healthier purchase.
How are you getting convenience shops on board? How are you influencing that change and encouraging them to stock more fruit and veg?
So we have a kind of two-pronged effect. So we have a team of guys out in the field and they cover the whole of Scotland basically. We've currently got about 2,500 stores on the database, and the development managers visit the stores, speak to the retailers, talk about our marketing campaigns and try and encourage them to stock it. And then I personally, as the field manager, I deal at head office level and speak to the symbol groups and do the same thing basically, and spread the word and talk about what campaigns we are doing, because at the end of the day everybody's interested in responsible retailing, so it's a very strong message to get across. And to be fair, they're all very supportive of the programme as a whole, and we've been very lucky actually. They're very keen to support us, and we do a lot of work in schools and different things with them, so it works well.
For people that are listening, what is the advantage to having more convenience shops stocking fruit and veg? Why is that useful for people that maybe couldn't get to a larger supermarket? What are some of those factors that are meaning that having that produce in local shops is really helping people eat more fruit and veg?
The Scottish Government have their healthy eating campaigns and all the different initiatives that they're working. So when we make sure that the convenience stores are well stocked, if somebody's educated themselves and they're ready to make that healthy choice, then it's really important that the range is there for them to make that decision. People have become more reliant on convenience stores over the past few years. The pandemic exacerbated it, and they're actually much better than they used to be. The days are gone of it just being confectionery and alcohol and tobacco, and they're realising that they have to step up to the mark and be much more responsive to consumers' needs, and we're helping that along a wee bit and make sure that they're making the right decisions.
Now we'll hear from Steffi from FEL Scotland.
The Veg Summit in its overall aim is thinking about how to make veg more accessible for people in Scotland. If there is one thing that you think you would change to make veg more accessible for people, what do you think would be your golden ticket thing?
If you could wave a magic wand, I guess for me it would always be everyone being able to buy the best veg that they can, but in terms of maybe a more achievable goal, definitely access to growing their own, because it also brings along so many other mental health benefits of growing your own food and just that empowerment. I think I've seen a lot of joy come from that community.
And is that something that you're working on in Stirling to try and make that more accessible for people?
Yes, I come from Forth Valley Food Futures as an umbrella, and that's looking how we can work with the three food partnerships in our area. So we have Clacks Good Food, Stirling Food Partnership and Falkirk Food Futures. So absolutely every one of them have some project or some sort of ambition to definitely get access to locally grown food. In Clacks, for example, it's quite an exciting vertical farming project. And in Falkirk Food Futures, we work very closely with the community growing officer in the council. So we're always looking at getting people areas of land, really upskilling community growing projects. We have a project called Garden Buddies, which pairs them up with volunteers to try and find the gaps in the system to get people more connected and more actively growing lovely veg.
And now we've heard one perspective on the benefits of growing our own food, we'll hear from an organisation in Edinburgh making that possible for people.
So I'm here with Debs from Edinburgh Garden Partners. Could you tell me a little bit about what you do and how you increase people's access to growing space?
Of course, yeah. So basically, Edinburgh Garden Partners is a garden sharing scheme in Edinburgh, and what we do is we match older people or people who aren't able to access or make the most of their garden due to a disability or a health condition with volunteers looking for space to grow, and then the volunteers set up a wee veg plot within the garden space. I don't know if it's the same in Glasgow or other places in Scotland, but in Edinburgh there's a huge waiting list up to 8 years plus for allotments, and a lot of people live in tenement flats and don't have access to a garden of their own, so don't have a growing space they can readily get involved in. So from the perspective of our volunteers, it's getting access to a growing space and trying out growing veg, a lot of them for the first time, and I think that's a really exciting opportunity for people. I'm sure it does increase the amount of veg they have on their plates, but it's for us, I think it's a lot about giving people that opportunity to give it a go and to learn. And for the garden owners as well, particularly older people sharing their space, there's definitely a knowledge sharing aspect as well. So a lot of people might have grown in that space themselves for many, many years and carry with them a lot of knowledge that they can share with the volunteer, but maybe aren't physically able to do the growing themselves anymore. And whatever's grown is usually shared between the volunteer and the garden owner. So they're getting access to veg that is grown in their garden that they wouldn't otherwise be having. And for some people as well, it might be that they're sharing their garden because they don't have any interest in growing or they've never been able to. So for them, it's somebody who's popping up in their garden, growing stuff and giving them that freshly grown veg. So they're all individuals that are involved in these partnerships and they all work in different ways. But I think there's some really magical, mutually beneficial relationships as well as this kind of increased access to growing space and to veg.
Well, it sounds fantastic, and also like you're solving those problems of the allotment waiting list and people not necessarily having garden space in a way that totally makes perfect sense of linking up with unused space. For people that would want to maybe follow in your footsteps or replicate something similar, how do you get people on board and start to engage with people and find those people with gardens that they're not using and the people that want to grow in them? How would you recommend getting that started?
Well, it's a really interesting question, actually, because that's something we've been looking into quite a lot recently. We've been going since 2011 in Edinburgh, so we've had a while to refine our model and iron out any of the tricky bits of sharing, which can be difficult. Sharing's not always easy. So we've got quite a lot of relatively robust procedures in place to do that. And we've been thinking a lot recently about that. Exactly. How do we help others to do that in other places? Because as far as we're aware, there aren't any schemes doing the same thing in other cities, actually across the UK. And the reason I say that is we get a lot of inquiries from people saying, I want to do this. So yeah, we've created an information pack that we can share with people that helps them start exploring what do they need to consider if they're setting up a growing scheme. And I think the important thing really is context, that I spoke a bit about the context we're in, and that there's this big allotment waiting list, lots of people live in tenement flats. So it's obviously a really big demand for it. In other places, maybe there's an ageing population, and so there's a really big supply, and how do you match that with people growing in the space? So I guess for me, the first point would be speaking with people about context. But what we're trying to do ultimately is create a network of groups that run garden sharing schemes across the country. And I guess it's learning for us too, because yeah, I really recognize every context is different, and hopefully it will work in other places, but you know, it's really interesting to learn from others as well.
I hope that this episode will have furthered your understanding of the different barriers and solutions to getting people eating more veg in Scotland. You can check out the links in the description to find out more from Nourish or from the other people who spoke on this episode. Thanks for listening.